Hello everyone, and welcome back to Family Forever Child's Conversations on Care podcast. My name's Amanda Griffith, and I'm the CEO at Family Forever Child. This podcast is a space where we can hear directly from practitioners about how they are providing care to vulnerable children and families around the world. Family Forever Child is a growing network of 42 local civil society organisations working on the ground in 38 countries. These organisations have a wealth of knowledge and experience from years of working with children and communities to develop solutions to improve children's care. Today's podcast is the first episode related to the topic of providing support in emergencies. In the light of the current conflict in Ukraine, Family Forever Child members are sharing their experience of supporting vulnerable children and families in emergency situations in the hope that they will be a useful resource for those practitioners directly involved in responding to the current situation in Ukraine and other ongoing emergencies around the world. Humanitarian crises such as conflict threaten the health, safety and well-being of children, families and communities in a myriad of ways. In Ukraine, mass displacement of the population in areas directly affected by the conflict, both internally and across borders, has resulted in the separation of children from their families. As of July 2022, more than 12 million have fled their homes, of which 7 million people are internally displaced in Ukraine, including approximately 2.8 million children. Over 5.2 million refugees, 90% of whom are women and children, have fled to neighbouring countries and beyond, seeking protection and requiring critical assistance. I'm joined today by Penelope Wufobulu, psychologist at Methodrasi, Action for Migration and Development in Greece, in Southern Europe. Since 2009, Methodrasi has worked to facilitate the reception and integration of refugees and migrants in Greece. Penelope, welcome, and thank you very much for joining me in this conversation.
Hello, Amanda. Hello, everyone. I'm really, really thankful for this invitation. And I really hope our conversation today will be helpful for the people that are into the Ukrainian crisis and organizations that are helping right now these people to supporting them and helping them with their new lives.
Thanks, Penelope. And so just to start off and set the context of your expertise that you can share with us, could you explain a bit about for the listeners, the context in which Methodrasi was founded back in 2009?
Mm-hmm. In 2009, in Greece, there were already important refugee flows, but there were huge gaps in all fields. There were very few humanitarian organizations, and Methodrasi was actually founded by Laura Papa, and the main aim was to find the best possible ways for facilitating the life conditions of the refugees that had already arrived, and of course, of the unaccompanied minors, which were very few at that moment, but they increased at the humanitarian refugee crisis of 2015. So the first gap that we actually had to cover was the one of interpretation services. That was something really important because people were here, they were seeking access to services, they were trying to do all the legal procedures for the asylum service, and they had no way to communicate. So interpretation was something really fundamental. And that was the first gap that Methodrasi covered. And at the same time, there was another really important need, mainly for the asylum procedures, and that was the identification and certification of victims of torture. So that was another program that was in the very beginning of the organization. And then the organization started developing with programs that had a lot to do with unaccompanied minors. In 2011, the escorting missions for unaccompanied minors started, because until then, minors were escorted, they were transferred in several places by the police, and sometimes the police used even handcuffs. And after that, in 2014, we had the guardianship program. We will talk about that afterwards. So yes, this is how Metadrasi started and then expanded and developed with other programs also. But the first thing we had to deal with was the interpretation.
Excellent, thank you. And Penelope, now, what's the situation in Greece today regarding refugees and migrants, and how much of that is migration is due to people fleeing conflict, do you think, approximately?
Regarding this, I will talk with numbers from the UNHCR. Today, the situation continues to be difficult in terms of refugee flows, but the flows are much, much less than in previous years. The numbers from the UNHCR are for the year 2022. Until the end of July, we had the arrival of 6,835 people. About half of them arrived from the sea, and half of them arrived from the northern borders of Turkey, from Evros. These are the official figures. But of course, we also have to mention that many more people have arrived, but with the pushbacks realized by the Polish authorities, many of them are returned in Turkey. Some of them are killed. This is a really difficult situation. And also, according to the official numbers, most of these people are from countries at warlike conflicts, like the state of Palestine, Afghanistan, Somalia, Sierra Leone, and Syria. These are the countries of origin that most of the people that arrived in 2022, and they are countries with warlike conflicts.
And in terms of you saying that, because there is now this agreement the European Union has with Turkey, as you've said, which means that even those that arrive are then sent back to Turkey. Mm-hmm. Are those also unaccompanied minors? Will those also be children that will be being returned to Turkey?
Yes, they are. I can tell that also from personal experience. I mean, not only from reports, because we had unaccompanied minors being homeless. I mean, they hadn't been able to go in a housing shelter yet, and they were like, because this is a totally illegal procedure, they were like kidnapped by the police and returned to Turkey with intermediate station at Komotini. So yes, these things really happen. Nobody wants to hear about them or talk about them. But unfortunately, these things happen. I mean, the European Union is totally aware of that,
And if we look now at the work that Metadrassi does, because I know that you've developed some fantastic work around working with unaccompanied minors, unaccompanied children. Can you just talk a little bit more about the work that you've developed for that particular group of...
Of course. First of all, the program about the unaccompanied minors, the guardianship program, that was a really pioneering program for the Greek standards. Since the beginning of 2014, people who were specially trained, the guardians, they were people with from several professions, like psychologists, social workers, but also from other fields like educators. They were trained, and they started acting like, of course, in close cooperation with the public prosecutors for minors. They started working as guardians, let's say, which is exactly what the words say. I mean, their job was to safeguard the rights of the unaccompanied children, taking care of their best interests with tailor-made decisions and ensuring their access to asylum procedures, family reunification procedures, or relocation procedures, access also to medical care, to education, and to all kind of activities necessary for their psychosocial development. What I consider really important in this guardianship program was that the guardians had to create a personal relation with each minor, and this should be a relation of trust and safety, which was really important for the support of the minor, but also for the cooperation of the minor, so that we could get all the necessary information to support the legal case and to support also all the other needs of each minor. So it was a personalized support, and that is what is really important.
And you talk about that, and I think for us, those of us that have never been involved in with working with children, unaccompanied children, of course, because of their journey and those that have been part of that journey, trust is actually something that is very different for those children, because they have learnt not necessarily to trust the system, because as you said, the police may not actually be there to support them and protect them. And also that particularly if they're part of a smuggling unit, then actually they've been told not to trust, not to tell the truth, not to tell their story. And so I think I'd just like to explore that, because I think that as you say it, that seems to us, of course, you would build a trusting relationship. But what are the complexities of building a trusting relationship with a child who may have been on a journey for some children, over a year? I mean, I know that for some children it's 10 years. So just to explore a little bit about how that trust is built with a child who has learned not to trust.
Yes, exactly as you say, Amanda, it's really difficult for many of those children, because they have suffered severe trauma also during their travel, some of them. So it's really difficult to trust the system and to trust people who represent that system. So this is why I consider this program really special, because the guardians gave all the necessary time for this relationship to be built step by step, and they were there with real care and real consistency, so that the minors would understand and start feeling safe with them. So, of course, It's not something that could happen within the first week, of course, or within the first 2 weeks. This is something that we build with time. Of course, each child is different and has different needs and responds differently to this relation. But it was really, really important that the guardians were there for each and every child. Of course, as you can understand, in order for this relation to develop in time and with proper care, each guardian could not have 30, 40 children. Mm. That was impossible because the guardian was responsible to accompany the child everywhere. In the asylum service, in the hospital, in education, to go out and do activities, try to socialize the minors in the Greek context. So it's a lot of work and it needs a lot of time.
And so, as you say, it's intense in terms of staff to child ratio as well. So exactly. Anybody doing this needs to recognize that this is something that needs intensive resourcing to be able mm-hmm. to do it done mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm.
And at least that was the way that Metadrasi founded and developed the guardianship program. In 2021, the guardianship program was assigned to the ministry. I mean, the state was responsible for that. And there was an effort to change the function, the basic functions of this program. So less time was required between the guardian and the minors. And that didn't help. We had this program running by the state from March 2021 until the end of the August 2021, and it wasn't so effective like the previous program. Mm-hmm. Right now, the program is running by Metadrasi, but since there is no support from the state, but only from other funds and personal funds of Metadrasi and own funds, it is with much, much less guardians and also less minors. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about this present moment.
Sure. And then there are other programs that Metadrasi has developed. Do you want to talk about some of those, the integration
yes,
program?
Of yeah. course. Great. There are a lot of programs for the unaccompanied minors. The foster care was a very important program. This program started in 2016 and it was about the placement of unaccompanied minors in foster families, mainly Greek families. And until today, 109 unaccompanied children have been placed to family care, especially for children under 12 years old. That was a really, really important situation because that was the most appropriate and durable solution for children younger than 20 years old.
And, so, and did the foster carers, did you have to do specific training for foster carers who were taking in these children that, as you said already, you know, have had difficulties with relationships?
Mm-hmm. In this program, there are social workers and psychologists working. So there is a first phase where the families have interviews and both the families together with the Metadrasi, they can decide if in the end the families really want and they are able to take on this responsibility, because there were families that they had the wish and they came to Metadrasi, but after this first phase of interviews, they decided that they couldn't do it. Mm. So there is a preparatory phase. And then there is the matching, because it's not that we give any child to any family. There is a matching process. And after the matching process, the child is placed in the family and monitored and supported by psychologists and social workers in Metadrasi. So both the children and the families have the psychosocial support by Metadrasi during the time of the foster.
Excellent. And then for older children, I know that one of the programs that you've developed is about supported independent living, which again has been a groundbreaking work that you've done. Mm. Would you like to just explain a little bit more about what you put in place for that?
Yes, that was in 2018. That was also a very important program for the minors aged 16 to 18, because there was this main problem that minors lived in shelters, and then suddenly after they completed transition accommodation. When I say shelter, I mean transition accommodation. And when they reached the age of 18, they suddenly had to find themselves all alone in the Greek society. And this was a really difficult task for them to survive. So the idea behind the supported independent living for the unaccompanied minors was to create the conditions so that we could support and help the minors to have a successful transition to adulthood on one hand, and their integration to society on the other hand. So that was a situation in every apartment. We had four unaccompanied minors and specially trained professionals, mentors, psychologists and social workers, and educators also, who supported the living of the minors. Initially, there was a lot of support, and the idea was that this support could gradually, as the minors would reach 18 years old, would gradually get less, so that they could support themselves on their own. And emphasis was placed on strengthening themselves, on building self-confidence, and developing their own personality and skills. Each minor had a monthly amount of money that he had to decide how he will use this money through the month, so that he can buy food, go out, buy some clothes. I mean, all this. Of course, we could provide them with clothes if they needed clothes, and we did that. But the idea was that they learn how to handle this amount of money and live on their own with this amount of money. So this program was really important and had really good results, because minors were much better prepared to enter the society and integrate and start looking for a job when they reached 18 years old.
And I think what I'm hearing from you, Penelope, is that in each of your programs, it's very holistic. Like you say, there's a mentor and an educator and a social worker and a psychologist. So it's not just saying you will have a key worker, but it's actually really thinking about the different disciplines that need to be available for a child so that there's really a holistic support that's in place.
Yes.
Seems to be part of Metadrassi's approach. From what I'm hearing.
Yes, that's really, really essential what you note, Amanda, because only with this holistic approach we could really support the children and understand all their needs. These were two really, really important programs, the guardianship program, they are, and the SEAL apartments. We also had the mentorship project that that was a project that ran from 2020 until 2022. And we had 100 minor unaccompanied minors matched with 100 Greek people. The matching was made mainly according to the professions of the people and the interest, the general interests of the minors, and also their wishes regarding the job they wanted to engage themselves with. The minors were again 16 to 18 years old. So that was also a program monitored by several professionals. So there was a relation built between the minors and the people, a one-to-one relation. And there was the chance for doing together activities that would enrich the knowledge of the minors regarding the professions they wanted to do. Also several other sports or cultural activities and activities that would help with socializing the minors. So that was also a program that helped with integration.
In terms of your experience in Metadrassi in developing these programs, and I know each one of those has been very much a pilot that Metadrassi has done and then really sort of developed and tested them, what have been some of the challenges that you face in implementing and developing these programs, and how have you overcome some of those challenges?
Yes. The challenges had to do with many issues. The funding issues is always a thing for the humanitarian organizations. Also, another issue was the cooperation between actors, between other organizations, but mainly the cooperation with the public services. That was a huge problem. This is still a very big problem. I mean, there are some efforts to overcome these problems, creating sub-working groups and having meetings monthly to discuss about these difficulties in communication and cooperation. But sometimes public services do not participate in these meetings. Meanwhile, all the other organizations we are there. Other problems have to do with finding the appropriate professionals to work with us. Working in Metadrassi does not require only academic skills. It's a job that all jobs in Metadrassi also require personality specific skills, and this is something really difficult to find the right professionals that will work with the minors.
I wonder, because at certain times during this period too, Greece has faced its own incredible financial challenges. And I wondered whether there's ever you've ever experienced that the general public feels resistance or any reaction to services and support going to refugee communities.
Amanda, thank you very much. Thank you very much, because this is, of course, another problem we have to deal with. I believe in the past it was more intense, and it has to do with racism. This is what you're talking about, I believe. I mean, these, you are putting it much more politely, and but this is what we have to do. Yes, we had really strong reactions. Unfortunately, sometimes also aggressive reactions to the towards the refugees, against the refugees. This is something we constantly try to work with by informing people with campaigns that are aiming to explain what these people have gone through, how we can support these people. Of course, it's getting better. It's not like it was back in 2011 or 2015. But, you know, we cannot reform the society. So, so unfortunately, we always have to deal with this kind of aggressive behaviors. For me, what's really important is also to inform the minors about that. I mean, to prepare them, not to hide the problem, because some people think that if you talk about racism to the minors, you will scare them. I believe that on the contrary, if you prepare them, because they are not from another planet, they can really well understand what's happening. So if you prepare them and empower them and strengthen them to be able to deal with this kind of aggressive behaviors, then you can protect them.
Well, and I think for me also, what's important in this field of work, it's not just technical, it is political. Children on the move, unaccompanied minors, are a political issue. And therefore, if you're working in this world, you need to be aware of the fact that you're working with something that can be politicized. And and there's that whole aspect of your work, as you say, racism, but the politicization of the issue as well. So unlike maybe other social work, areas of work which are more technical, this is very technical, but it's also political, and I think it's important for people who are stepping into this work to be aware of that.
Exactly, I totally agree, and this is something, because in Metadrasi we try to make trainings constantly to train our employees, our professionals in all fields. Right now, I am working in the education field, and we do a lot of trainings. And what I constantly try to make people understand is exactly what you say. Academic skills and knowledge is not enough. We approach minors with our whole personality. And this means that we approach them with our beliefs, with our ideas, with our attitude. So if something goes wrong with our attitude, this will be understood at the very first moment from the minors. So these are really, really important issues. And that's why I was telling that working with the appropriate professionals is really important to be able to really support the minors and the refugees in general.
And if I can explore that a bit more with you, Penelope, in that what I think is important about what you're saying is, yes, there must be all this practical support, but also there needs to be this support to the psychological health and well-being of young people. Mm-hmm. So what in your experience are some of the specific ways that the experience of conflict has impacted psychologically on children and young people, and how do you address those?
I can say that the minors that we are working with, and in general, the people, also the adults we are working with, many of these people have suffered multiple trauma because they have suffered the trauma from the war in their countries of origin. They have suffered the trauma of death, sometimes of their beloved persons, the trauma of loss of their homes, of everything actually, their homes, their countries, their beloved persons. There is a huge loss. We're talking about a huge loss. So we're talking about this kind of trauma, and then the trauma of the travel. Some people are abused, some people are hurt, I mean physically hurt, injured, severely injured during their travel. And then we have the trauma and the shock sometimes of the conditions they have to deal when they arrive. So this is totally a psychologically devastating condition for people. Of course, each person is different and they have different mechanisms to cope, different coping mechanisms to cope with all this trauma. So yes, we have to deal with people that sometimes they have anxiety disorders, they have depression, they have post-traumatic disorders, they have all kind of different psychological difficulties. And of course, some other people can cope much better because the coping mechanisms and
resilience, I guess.
Thank you so much. I'm my mind stuck and I was looking for this word, Amanda, you are in my mind. Thank you so much. Yes, and resilience is something people have in different point. So with our psychologists and social workers, we are actually trying to offer psychological support to the minors who need that, because I have worked in the with our psychologists and social workers, we are actually trying to offer psychological support to the minors who need that, because I have worked in the guardianship program for some years, and I was supporting minors. I can say, if we go into a little bit of more detail, that a holding environment is itself therapeutic for those children. And the holding environment, that a holding environment is itself therapeutic for those children. And the holding environment is created not only from the psychologist, but from all the professionals. And this is something we really, really aim to provide to the minors, because the holding and caring environment should come also from the guardian, from the educator, from the social worker, from all people engaged in the care of the unaccompanied minors. Now, regarding my work, I mean the psychological sessions, I would say that they are mainly counseling and supportive sessions and not psychotherapeutic, because minors are still in a transition phase. So what is more useful to do most of the times is to try to hold, support, heal the trauma instead of working with the trauma. That would be a more deep psychotherapeutic work. But in order to really work with the trauma, people have to have settled down. People have to feel safety and not being in a transition. Of course, with minors who had the need, and you can understand this as a professional, to do a more psychotherapeutic work. We were there to walk with them according to their needs.
I think I'd really like to re-emphasize that then, Penelope, because I think the danger is that if you're new to this field, you may apply ways of working that have worked in a stable environment, which are not appropriate. And I think this is so important that this, you've got to recognize where that child is in there, as you call it, this is a transition phase. And therefore there's a specific type of intervention and support that is relevant for where they are at the moment, rather than bringing in the standard approach, regardless of not recognizing what's that child's situation. I think that's really important to emphasize.
Exactly. And this is where we need to be extremely careful. We may be good professionals, the local population, but exactly like you said, we cannot apply same interventions to these people who are in a transitional condition. It's really, really important because, and this is what we're trying to do, to support them and not to further harm them. Because if you try to do psychotherapy or psychoanalysis with a minor who is inside the trauma, in a totally unsafe conditions, in a totally strange and threatening environment, then you will cause further damage. So it's really, really important.
And building on that, as you said, this is challenging and demanding work for staff, and it takes the whole person. So what do you have in place to support staff who are working on the ground? Because I can imagine this is also takes a lot from them to be always present and always providing this holding environment and bringing the whole person into the work.
We have individual and also group supervisions with psychologists, which is really important. It's really important because the professionals need also to feel safe and supported in order to face the difficulties with the minors. And also because this happened, especially with the guardianship program, since the guardians didn't have a concrete context of work, they were out with the minors. They were at their accommodation shelters. They were together with them at the hospitals. They were together with them at their activities. I mean, there was no concrete context to protect them and set the boundaries of their work. And because additionally, as we said, in this job, they needed to be engaged, personally engaged. Supervision was really important to set the boundaries and to set the psychological context, because these people need to be personally engaged, but on the other hand, they need to understand that they are not mothers, fathers, friends, or whatever. So this is a really fine balance that we had to keep. And of course, this fine balance was important in order to be able to help the minors, because if we lost this balance, then this would have an impact for the minors. That's why individual group supervisions and, of course, constant training, so that people can, professionals can have the possibility to reflect on what they are doing. This is really important. Sometimes when you are so much engaged in working with other people, and especially with minors, you lose the ability or the time to reflect, constantly reflect. So we need to create spaces for professionals to be able to reflect and readjust their actions. And these spaces are training and supervision.
Perfect. And just building on that, in terms of, because I know that just recently you've been working with Bulgarian practitioners who are providing support to the Ukrainian refugees and sharing your experience through a workshop that we ran. Could you share with us again today what advice you would give to other organizations who found themselves carrying out this work for the very first time in terms of providing support to refugee communities who have experienced mm-hmm. conflict?
Mm-hmm. It's really important that organizations create child protection protocols, that they create protocols for all their programs. That is really, really important for professionals to know how to act, how to intervene when there are problems, and where to refer, because the referral pathways are also really important when we deal with difficult situations. So protocols, child protection protocols, referral pathways, these are really important things to create since the first moment. Supervisions and training, really important. Regarding the professionals, also it's really important to have some qualities like flexibility, empathy is really, really important. Caring for their job when it has to do with people, but in any case, creating clear rules also for the professionals, focus on mental health issues. Also, interpretation is a really, really important thing. Because, for example, now we have to do with the Ukrainian crisis. I will bring a very small example. Here we have a lot of Russian interpreters. But for people from Ukraine to have to interact and share their trauma, their personal story, and their needs with a Russian interpreter, that was out of question.
Yeah.
So the way we handle the interpretation services is really, really important. And the interpreters also need a lot of training on how to behave and how to handle the situation with their beneficiaries. Mm. I say that because, especially now with Ukrainian refugees, sometimes we have Russian interpreters who speak Ukrainian, but it's it's a no-go to use a Russian interpreter for this. Is just a small example to explain that there are many, many issues in all fields, also in the interpretation, that we constantly have to keep in mind.
Exactly. It's the specificity of the situation all the time. It's not generalizing in any circumstances. It's always thinking of specificity. So looking forward, what do you think are going to be the most urgent issues that organizations working with refugee and migrant children and families will need to address in the coming months? What do you think the future looks like?
You mean regarding the Ukrainian refugees, the situation?
What we're actually conscious of is actually the Ukrainian situation is now pivoting on to all sorts of other global crises, and some of those don't have the visibility, the sort of drought in Ethiopia, the shortage of grain in Lebanon. There are many communities now that are under extreme stresses because of the Ukraine conflict. So and as you and I were speaking about earlier, the climate crisis itself is also generating all sorts of disasters as well. So we're conscious we're in turbulent times, and with turbulent times comes greater movement, and usually greatest movement of who are the most vulnerable are the ones who have the least resources to be able to do safe passage. So it's really just your views on, having worked so extensively with this, with communities, that refugee communities and the most vulnerable in terms of unaccompanied minors, how you're seeing that sort of future landscape.
Yes, I believe that the most urgent issues that will come up in the near future are housing issues. We are facing, I mean, whole Europe is facing now a financial crisis. So this, of course, will affect the care that we provide also to the refugee population. Here in Greece, this is already happening. I mean, a lot of housing programs are shutting down. And by the end of December, most of the housing programs will shut down. So this is a huge problem that we will have to deal with. I would say also poverty issues will come up, because with the unemployment, poverty will increase in refugees. Abuse issues is also something we will have to deal with. And of course, issues that we always have to handle, which are really, really important, which are integration issues. I mean, this is something really, really important. And we have now a very big educational programs aiming exactly to the integration of the refugees in the Greek society. But this, of course, goes for every organization in any place, that only with educational programs we can really aim to integration. And in these educational programs also, it's really important that there are included job counseling programs. We have this job counseling now in our educational programs. And so, yes, I believe educational programs and in general integration programs are the only answer to the coming problems. And of course, cooperation with the public services. We cannot avoid this cooperation. Sometimes it's really difficult. I mean, also for abuse cases that we have to cooperate with the police. Sometimes it's really difficult, but it's necessary. So cooperation is always a key issue.
Penelope, thank you so much. This has been really rich and insightful conversation. Thank you so much for sharing so much of your experience and depth of understanding about this incredibly important, but very complex area of work. And I really appreciate, because I know that Meta Drassi has developed such inspirational approaches. And so thank you for sharing at least some aspects of that work with us in terms of how to work with this vulnerable communities. And I think just to summarize some of the things that you've said is that how interpretation is a key part of the start point of everything is to recognize that. And that in all of the programs that you've talked about, your guardianship program, your foster care program, the supporter independent living program, that the really crucial thing is this holistic approach, this multidisciplinary approach. And, and within that is actually that every professional who comes to work in this field, it's not just their technical academic professional skills that there needs to be important, it's them as personalities, it's them as people and their behaviors that are so fundamentally important. And so and in terms of that, it's the ability to be able to create the holding environment, to create the sense of safety that then enables people to at least start to heal. But as you say, to recognize that these are children in transition, that they are not in a stable environment, and therefore any interventions we do need to be respectful of what is that situation for those children, and not in any way translate the work we do with stable populations to this community, but do things that are very relevant and cautious around how we do things. And within that, I think, as you're saying, for anybody who's starting to work in this field, is to make sure that they have proper protocols in place, but also a clarity for any member of staff about what is their role, what is their, how do they create those boundaries? How do they come with the whole person and yet also maintain the fact that they are professionals in this field? Provide them with the support that they need, and the important qualities that you talked about of flexibility and empathy being absolutely crucial. So I hope I haven't reduced what you said too much, but I hope that reflects some of the things that, that you've shared with us as important. And I'd just like to thank all of those of you who've been joining us to listen to this conversation on Care Podcast. You can help us spread the word and engage further in our conversations and activities by joining our community on the Changemakers for Children community platform. Visit changemakersforchildren.community to register. The more users there are, the stronger we will be. We hope you will join us next time. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.